anyway, this evening, we're very, very pleased that our Lady of the Ma-
Lord.
I'm so sorry. Lord of the Manor and her lovely son Ben, Panda Bray and Ben Bray, have come to tell us all about their long, long association with the district, and we're all very proud of them, really, because they've done so much for the area and for particularly for Shear. So I'll leave it to them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. I'm Ben. I'm Handa's son, as was just explained, and I've got a handful of questions that pre-planned to sort of to go through. But if anybody would like to ask as we go along, please just put up your hand or save the questions to the end, whatever is easiest. I know we're presenting to the History Society, so you probably know more about some of the history around here than I do, almost certainly. So if I make any mistakes, forgive me, but please let me know. So starting off with question one, welcome. The next year would be the 60th year of you inheriting the estate. If there was something that you could, a piece of advice that you could give to your 26-year-old self, what would it be?
Don't do it.
You see, your husband really might not like it, and my poor first husband didn't like it at all, but because it's a condition of the in the deed of settlement that the lord of the manor must take or bear and take and bear the name and arms of Bray, and he didn't mind about the arms, but he minded very much about changing his name, and he was Mr. Michael Moffat. He was Naya's father. We'd only been married 6 months, and it did seem very, very hard to change, to have to change his name. So we compromised, and we hyphenated it. So for the first several years, throughout our marriage, our surname was Bray Moffat. Luckily, when I was married for a second time to Ben's father, that was to Tony Jones, and Tony didn't mind two hoots about changing his name. He quite liked being manorial. So then we became just Bray, which is why Ben is Ben Bray and I am Handa Bray. And that's the reason why.
Okay. And you inherited from Sir Jocelyn Bray, your grandfather.
I did.
Could you explain to people why it didn't traverse your father?
Well, because my father had been drowned in the Canadian Arctic, aged 26. It was just 3 weeks before his 27th birthday. I was a month old. Obviously, I was not in the Arctic, for which I am profoundly thankful. But he did know I'd been born. They were able to get a wireless message to him in the Arctic. And he said, call her Handa. And my father was an ornithologist. He had a passion for the wild countryside, but especially for birds. And on his honeymoon, my mother and father had been up past the northwest coast of Scotland, where there is an island renowned for its puffins, and the island is called Handa Island. Handa is probably a Viking name, I think, but it's a beautiful island, so Reynold was able to get a message back to my mother saying, call her Handa. So that's what we did.
Can you tell me more about Reynold? Did he relish the idea of managing the estate, or?
I think he would have hated it. He didn't like authority. Mind you, all of this is a bit hearsay because, for obvious reasons, I didn't know him personally, but I've tried to discover as much about him as I possibly can, because it's rather wonderful how many of his attributes I share, and considering I didn't know him at all, I'm so privileged, for instance, to love classical music and painting and art and books and poetry. He wrote poetry. But as I say, he disliked any form of authority, and he kept getting into trouble with that. He went to Oxford. He didn't like Oxford, and he had a friend who shared his dislike for Oxford, so they published a pamphlet called Hate Oxford, and that didn't go down well at all with the authorities, nor did they like the fact that he took a kayak down the sewers of Oxford, and I think the sort of the local government in Oxford didn't appreciate their sewers having a kayak rolled down it.
He was quite an adventurer, wasn't he? And he didn't at one point he get caught in Russia when he told his parents that he was going to university or something?
He told his parents, by this time he was sent to Y Agricultural College to try to prepare him for the stewardship of the manor in due course. And he told his parents that he would be away for 3 weeks in April. He knew perfectly well that he intended to go with a great friend, Tom Manning, to Russia, for which he'd been refused a passport. But they thought that if they set off and went, there wasn't much that the Russians could do about it. So they got a boat, first of all, to Norway, and then for the next 3 months or so, they traversed with reindeer, which they knew nothing about how to look after reindeer on the snow, but they were treated with great kindness by all the people in northern Lapland, mostly. And after they succeeded in getting into to Russia, where they were put into prison, which is what they had aimed at in the first place, because they thought it would be interesting. And then there were questions asked in the Foreign Office, and all the parliamentarians said, how can these wicked Russians do this terrible thing to our poor boys? Poor boys were having a wonderful time. But they were released quite soon from prison in Leningrad, because I don't think the Russians really wanted to have them either. But then Reynold came back and wrote a book about it, and there's a copy of the book on the table, because it was published and was a great success. He was such a strange mixture, I think. There's one place, excerpt from one chapter in the middle of it, where they were in deep snow, they were having difficulty with the reindeer, and all he could think of was a Beethoven quartet, so which wasn't really practical from the reindeer's point of view.
No. Going back to Scheer for a minute, the association between the estate and Scheer has been quite well documented, and it's over 500 years. The legend revolves around a crown in a bush. Can you tell us a little
bit? It isn't a legend. I'm sure it's true. And I'm
rumour.
Sure.
I mean, fact.
Yes, of course. Rumour. Neither of us were there at the time. But it's to do with the Battle of Bosworth. And a great deal of this is true. My ancestor, Sir Reginald Bray, had been in the service of Henry, who became Henry VII, for many years. He'd been Margaret Beaufort's steward and had known Henry since Henry was a boy. By the time the Battle of Bosworth happened, Margaret Beaufort was married to Lord Stanley, and the Stanleys famously couldn't make up their mind whether they were going to support Richard or Henry, but in the end they decided to support Henry. So when the Stanleys did support Henry, the battle was won. Poor Richard, of course, was knocked off his horse, and Henry, with the help of the Stanleys and a great number of other supporters from France, I think, poor Richard was defeated, and his crown was knocked into a thorn bush. And legend, I think this bit might be legend, legend has it that it was Reginald Bray who found the crown in the thorn bush, but it would have been very presumptuous of him to have sort of crowned the king himself, so he handed it to his master, Lord Stanley, and Lord Stanley crowned the king. And after that, Reginald Bray, who was an intelligent man and very good with money, became one of Henry's chief ministers, he became his chancellor.
Wasn't he the financial advisor to Margaret Beaufort already? Wasn't he?
He was her
quite
steward.
Well known for being financially astute, wasn't he?
He was very astute, I think. He made himself a very great deal of money. And when he died, we're talking about Reginald Bray at the time, he left the bulk of his money His lands he left to his two nephews, but he left the bulk of his money for the completion of the building of St. George's Chapel, Windsor, of which I am enormously proud that the building of the chapel had come to a halt during the Wars of the Roses. But in Reginald's will, he left sufficient money for the completion of the building. And if you go to St. George's Chapel, which I think is one of the most beautiful buildings in England, you will see the Bray crest, which is a hemp bray or flax breaker, 175 times in the ceiling bosses in the nave. So please do go.
Quite modest then. Oh. No. I think St. Barney's seen a few. Yeah.
Well, I don't think he put the bosses there. No. They put them up in his honour, in thanksgiving for his gift, which enabled the completion of the chapel. And there is now a small side chapel in St. George's Chapel called the Bray Chapel in his honour. I mean, they were grateful. They were very appreciative. Yeah. And I think if you want a memorial, can you think of any building more beautiful than that? I love it.
It's a lovely building.
Yes, thank you.
It is. If we fast forward 300 years, some of the highlights include William Bray. Can you explain about his association with, I think it's Miss Molly Flutter? Is it Miss Flutter? Is that one of the players of baseball?
Yes, indeed. I think she was. It was on Easter Monday, 1755, and William Bray was a renowned historian, and he was, by profession, he was a solicitor, but he was very interested in the history of Surrey, and he had completed the publication of the first known history of Surrey, which had been begun by an older friend called the Reverend Owen Manning. So it's now known as Manning and Bray's History of Surrey. And
Are you familiar with William Bray? And, yes. I feel this might be sort of teaching you to suck eggs.
The Society had copies of Manning and Bray.
Do you?
Well, we passed it on to Surrey Archaeological Society
now. Right.
Where it can be more widely appreciated.
I think one of you may have attempted a transcription of some of William's astonishingly long diaries. Because he kept a diary from the age of 16 through to when he died at 92. Which takes some doing, I think.
Yes, Trevor's probably wondering if you don't
make did you? Did you? Done.
I haven't encountered that one yet.
Okay. We're still regarded as youngsters.
Right, right. Newbies.
But
he made quite a big contribution to the estate, though.
Tremendously. It was William who established the pines in the Hurtwood. A lot of the land on which the Hurtwood now stands had been heathland, and it was William who introduced the Scots pine to the Hurtwood. But you asked me about Miss Molly Flutter. In his diary, at the age of 17 or 18, I think, it was 1755, he recorded playing baseball with a group of ladies and a few gentlemen playing baseball with Miss Molly Flutter. And I think anybody who has a great friend called Miss Molly Flutter can't have been just the sort of stick-in-the-mud antiquarian for which he is renowned. And he's got such a twinkle in his eye, I think. There's a photograph of one of his portraits there. And the other day I was very surprised. I had an electrical problem which you couldn't solve. And through the parish magazine, I got into contact with a lovely electrician from Peaslake, I think, called Colin Campbell. And after he'd solved the electrical problem, he said, "Are you anything to do with the pub?" And I, this was mid-afternoon, and I wasn't being particularly alcoholic, and I couldn't think why he was asking, because I thought he meant the White Horse, and I'm nothing at all to do with the White Horse pub. But of course he meant the William Bray pub in Shear, which called itself, changed its name from the Prince of Wales to William Bray because it thought it would attract Americans who were keen on baseball. Some people think that William invented the game of baseball, which he didn't, but he is now famous in Shear.
His mention, if you check Wikipedia, his mention of baseball has now been predated. So they were quite excited at the time, weren't they? Did you get invited to open the NBA or the baseball equivalent of something back in the time when they discovered this?
What, in 1755?
No, when they discovered his diary that mentioned baseball, they were very excited about it. I think you went to a reenactment of the baseball game, is that right?
No.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry
about that. No, good.
But anyway, I think he's got a twinkle in his eye, and I'm partial to William.
Well, I know that 6 years later he sort of he saw the light and went to play cricket instead. So you know, he was obviously a good sportsman. So finally, the last question is to do with your tenure, and given that you inherited in 1964 as a female. Boss and head of the estate, do you think, I mean, given that times have changed, are there things that you found particularly tricky throughout the decades as a female boss? And
only at the very beginning, because one of my trustees, who I inherited from my grandfather, was a greedy solicitor who totally disapproved of me. He didn't think I should have inherited, and there wasn't very much he or I could do about it because I did inherit. And he just kept on emphasizing the fact that the estate was doomed. It was far too small. It had suffered three or four lots of death duties within three or four generations. There was no possible way it could survive, and he didn't help it survive because I had to sell a great many cottages and some woodland and far too many farms to pay the death duties. And one piece of woodland I sold was, I discovered later, was bought by John Kerr, and I strongly disliked him. But he was the only person who thought that it was totally unsuitable for me to inherit. I just thought it was my duty to do my very best, both for the community of Shear and for our estate. And there was no way I was going to let the estate dwindle into nothingness under my tenure. So I haven't yet.
No, you certainly haven't. Mm. Well done.
But everybody else has been so kind to me. I think it actually helps that I don't look at all manorial. And so I don't look as though I'm sort of swanking around the place being hefluted and Lady Muck. I don't think people think I'm that.
No,
and I think that has helped.
Yeah, you've done extremely well. Extremely well. I think that sort of finishes the set of questions that I've got, but thank you very much.
Thank you so much for thinking of the questions and being such a wonderfully strong support. And Ben is going to make the most wonderful Lord of the Manor. And please, will you cheer for Ben?
If anyone's got any questions.
It's probably a little known fact that at the Battle of Bosworth, I'm sure there was a unicorn which helped Reginald Bray find the Crown of Thorns.
Where does your enthusiasm for unicorns come from?
Well, it began because I used to wish on white horse's tail, and then it was a natural extension. And unicorns are beautiful and brave, and they mean an awful lot to me.
Sorry.
And they've helped me survive this evening so far.
Do bring you luck.
Thank you for talking to us this evening. Could I ask, what link, if any, is there between the Lord of the Manor, and there are more than one Lord of the Manors around Surrey, and the Lord Lieutenant of the county, in both this county and many other counties? Is there a link at all between the two?
Well, the Lieutenancy, I am a Deputy Lieutenant, but I forget what... the sort of parameters of responsibility are for the lieutenancy. They are there to represent the Crown and to serve the community of Surrey in every possible way they can. So it's very much an association of people whose chief duty it is to serve the county and the community.
But you were asked to become a deputy lieutenant. It's not something that comes with the territory.
No, it didn't.
Of Lord of the Manor. I think they are quite separate.
But we are incredibly lucky in Surrey, I think, to have Michael Moore Molyneux as our Lord Lieutenant, and I'm very privileged to be one. And Pat Grayburn at the back, of course, is a most distinguished Deputy Lieutenant.
I think a friend of mine said that she'd taken part in some performances at a little theatre in the grounds at one time. Can you tell us anything about that?
Oh, that would be the Barn Theatre, which happened under my great-uncle Reginald's time. It was one of the barns, I don't know, I mean, probably a great many of you here know the High House Barns.
Tony Reed's farm, if anybody knew Tony Reed, he was the farmer, since 1940, I think.
So The people who acted in the main barn, and it became known as the Barn Theatre, were mostly undergraduates, I think. They were just a group of amateurs, but some of them went on to become distinguished professionals like Peter Ustinov and Dirk Bogard, and they just used to come and perform quite audaciously. Intellectual plays in the summertime. They used to camp in the fields round about High House, and my great uncle was one of the trustees of trust houses, so he used to augment their liquid sustenance. And my second husband, Tony, your father, once worked for. It was Peter Ustinov who said, oh yes, he remembered Reggie Bray very well, because they used to be invited to go up to the manor house to have baths, which I expect was very, very, very necessary, because they were otherwise just camping round about the barns. So I should think the barns were, the baths were very much appreciated.
Okay.
I was wondering if there's a picture of Sir Reginald Bray, the man who was at the Battle of Bosworth.
Well,
there is such a picture.
There is a photograph of a painting of him on the table there.
Is that?
Mm. I think that painting is that painting Victorian?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, because I'm not sure any sort of original pictures of him.
He came from Worcestershire. Reginald Bray, and so there are in Malvern Priory there are stained glass windows representing both Henry VII and Reginald Bray and other members of Henry's court, and so that the picture of him there may be taken from a photograph of one of the stained glass windows in Malvern Priory. Have I bored you all absolutely rigid? You're struck dumb.
Okay.
Are you the first female lord of the manor? Have there been females before you?
I don't think so. I mean, not in our family.
No.
Because, of course, my father would have, if he'd lived, would have been. So it's just pure accident, but I am definitely the Lord of the Manor, not the Lady of the Manor, because the Lady of the Manor would be my wife, and I haven't got a wife.
What have you found most challenging, and what have you found most enjoyable about the road?
most enjoyable is to feel that I am being a useful part of the community, and I mean. people are so wonderfully kind and generous, and I've enjoyed being a governor of a school. And there are times when one regrets there are quite so many committee meetings. And when one's best of intentions are strongly disapproved of. In the 1970s, I had tried to obtain planning permission to build a group of sheltered houses in the centre of Shire in the kitchen garden. I discussed it with the chief planning officer, who thought it would be a useful contribution to Shire, and the doctors in Shire surgery needed to find a new site to build a new larger surgery, and so the plan had been to build a surgery on part of the site and to build sheltered housing on the other half, and I thought it would be a useful thing to do. But people in Shire were absolutely appalled and thought that. So for about 6 months, they wrote letters to the Surrey Advertiser saying my ancestors would be turning in their graves, and I was just using, proposing this to line my pockets, and it was the most monstrous thing to do. And they established SOS, Save Our Shire, which had a base in Lower Street, and they sold ice creams to children saying I was going to kill the docks on the pudding board. It was a very difficult time indeed. But I didn't.
It's challenging. It is definitely challenging. Go on, Lana.
Well, I just wanted to ask, what you're most proud of having done while you've been in Lord Manor? I know you've been involved, you opened up the stone quarry, so some stone was used to build beautiful buildings in Cranley and Gravetye Manor, or whether it was perhaps converting the barns so beautifully and winning awards. I wonder what you feel is your most proud achievement.
I think the fact that we still exist.
Because back when you inherited, is it right that the rents didn't cover the rates? The basic, the council tax.
Yes, there was no such thing as sort of housing benefit. So my trustees kept saying, Hannah, you must put the rents up, because when I inherited, the estate paid the rates, which were often higher than the rents which we received from the tenants. And my trustees thought that this was not a practical way to go on. And but it became much easier once housing benefit was introduced. So I don't think we are excessively greedy, grasping landlords, and we try our very best to be responsible landlords. Sorry, that didn't properly answer your question, though. But it's been such an enormous privilege to be in a position where I think we can be useful, and we still survive.
Some of the families have been in for an astonishingly long time. There's a guy who unfortunately died a few years ago, and his family have been in the house for 115 years. So, and that's not, I mean, that is quite a long time. That's quite unusual, but not entirely unusual. Families have been there for a long, long time. Griffiths, the Tunnels, the Knapps, the Sherlocks, they've all been around.
Yes.
Hannah, I was going to ask you, so during the last 60 years, is there one particular decade, if you could choose one particular decade in Shire, that was for you the best decade?
Yes, I think the year we had our 500th birthday, and practically everybody in the village came, and lots of people sort of dressed up appropriately, so that the village policeman wore his Victorian policeman's outfit, and I dressed up medievally, and you were little then.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful time, and people thought we were good news, and it was only the following year when everybody thought I was so abominable. So it was lovely to have had the happy celebratory year first.
85, yes.
When I was younger,
there used to be the Shire Primrose.
Yes.
Any thoughts of bringing that back?
Yes.
I've had various chats with other people about it.
Yeah.
You know, people who grew up here, like myself. And it was a very well-liked, good atmosphere.
Were you ever in it?
Yes.
Were you?
Yeah.
So you were a kid in the
push. Right, yeah,
in the band.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, when we talk about it, everyone has really fond memories of it. But I'm aware that some people now think it's dangerous and a silly thing to do.
It's also the cost of Silver Cross prams. It's tricky. You'd have to get an out and about or something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somewhere else there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have thought about.
Yeah. Oh, but there you go. We've already got one supply here.
It's because you've been a baby in a pram, haven't you?
I was in the fruit and nut team. prophetic. No, but it was good crack, definitely.
There was a wheelbarrow race last year.
There was an attempt, yeah. Wasn't there? To sort of, I think it could be done like that. But people used to sort of make up their prams into sort of Viking ships and all the rest of it. I'm not sure it would work exactly the same. Was it done on the same day as the fair in the square? Was that the same
the
sort of?
After.
Was it not?
Yes, all the day after.
Oh, remember. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But there was fancy dress. It was really good.
It was good. It was good. They are. They are. They are quite expensive now. We should look into it.
Isn't it lucky you're here?
Yes, isn't it? Well, thank you very much. I don't know. Maybe we should all go off down to the Drum and Arms for a swift half.
Yes, thank you very, very much for coming.
Thank you.
Commercial plug. And
you certainly can, Keith. Yeah.
Shire Museum. How many here have been to Shire Museum?
Oh, wow.
Loads of families should really go. There's a corner there dedicated to the Bray family, a small corner. And are there many interesting things? Unfortunately, because it's run by volunteers, it's only open on Saturday afternoons and Sunday afternoons from 2 to 5.
Thank you, Keith. They very kindly let me borrow some of the items that are.
Don't go there tonight because it's empty. It's all on this table. Thank you. Yes. No.
Okay.
Yeah. All good.
Bearing in mind your experience with a planning proposal in Shire. You must have had some thoughts coming here tonight in case people had awkward memories and still harboured anxieties. I think it's been a fairly friendly bunch tonight.
You've been wonderful. Thank you very much. And thank you for coming, because it's a very chilly night. So I think you should all go home, keep warm and have a drink.